First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
A pandemic of the unvaccinated. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, why Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry and other officials are begging the public to get vaccinated as the Delta variant spreads through this community. Get on the line. Join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, combating the opioid epidemic in the state. That hasn't gone away. Plus, the latest on activating the downtown riverfront. That and more all coming up. But first this hour, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry on Wednesday appealed to the city to get vaccinated. Only about half of you out there are fully vaxxed. This, as the Delta variant of COVID-19 is surging through Northeast Florida, and ICUs are filling up with unvaccinated people. Here is the mayor.
The data shows that nearly all patients suffering severe symptoms from this virus in our hospitals right now are not vaccinated. The results are clear. The shots work. They're highly effective in preventing severe illness and death from COVID-19.
Now, while the mayor urged vaccination, he also said that he would not reinstate a mask mandate for Duval County or call for any more lockdowns.
To shut an economy down of 1 million people, many of which have been vaccinated, because some have decided not to get vaccinated, I'm not going to impose that on those people. We need to do what we're doing today and push the facts about vaccinations and get people out to get vaccinated.
We should note that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has actually made it illegal for local mayors like Mayor Curry to institute mask mandates or other measures to protect the public from COVID-19. For the latest this morning, we welcome back to the show Chad Nielsen. He's Director of Accreditation and Infection Prevention at UF Health Jacksonville. Chad, always great to have you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, Melissa. Thanks again for having me on.
And as this public health crisis worsens in our community, give us a call. Again, ICUs are filling up once again with COVID patients, and we're talking mainly about people 50 and under right now, folks. And we're also talking about people who haven't been vaccinated. So give us a call, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. What's the situation at UF Health Jacksonville, Chad?
Yeah, Melissa, we've been seeing a rapid increase in the number of COVID-19 patients coming into our emergency department that we've been forced to admit because of severe illness. We have blown through our previous high number of COVID-19 admits. We reached a peak in January of 2021 of about 125 patients across our two campuses that were infected with COVID-19. We're well past that. We have 146 as of just a few minutes ago, and that number has really doubled over the last 10 days. So we're in dire straits here, as are the other hospitals in town dealing with all of these new COVID patients.
This is virtually always a situation where an unvaccinated person is coming into the ICU because they cannot breathe. Can you talk a little bit about the patients you're seeing?
Absolutely. So over 90% of all of our current COVID-19 patients admitted are unvaccinated. 90%. Since June, we've had about 24 deaths due to COVID-19, and every one of those deaths was an unvaccinated individual. So we can't foot stomp this enough that vaccines are going to be the only way out of this. But unfortunately, it's going to take weeks for anybody getting vaccinated now to be truly protected. So we're preparing for even worse at this point across the city for hospitalized patients. We're just pleading with the public to get vaccinated and be safe.
Yeah. And we're talking about people 50 and under primarily, right, Chad? Most seniors, citizens around this area have gotten vaccinated. People 50 and younger who are otherwise healthy, it's my understanding, often are coming in and getting very sick. Tell us about some of the stories that you're hearing about some of these folks.
Absolutely. So our data does reflect that. The data reflects that we are admitting with COVID-19 a larger proportion of younger individuals. Our average age of an admitted COVID-19 patient has dropped. It's no longer in the 60s. It's into the 50s. And again, the majority of these patients are unvaccinated. We also are seeing a rising pediatric population, although still small numbers. We have seen a quadruple in number of PEDS patients versus our January surge. We're also seeing larger numbers of individuals in their 20s or 30s or 40s. In fact, 70% of our COVID-19 admits right now are under the age of 69. So we are truly seeing a younger population in our hospital who are showing up with a more severe illness due to this Delta variant.
A new study of brain scans before and after COVID-19 has found evidence of brain damage, even in mild cases. People experiencing brain fog, forgetfulness, they're more likely, according to researchers, to be vulnerable to Alzheimer's and dementia as they get older. The long-term impacts of this virus are only now just being understood, Chad. And so it can't be stressed enough that this is no joke and that you can get very sick or die even if you think you don't need the vaccine. What are your thoughts about the mayor's comments yesterday urging vaccination, although he is not calling for a new mask mandate? And in our local schools, kids are getting ready to go back to school in a few weeks and masks are optional and there is no vaccine for kids under 12.
Yeah, well, we're happy that the mayor's office and even increasingly so the governor are starting to advocate for increased vaccinations as a way to get out of this. However, it is undeniable, though, that vaccines aren't the only way. We have to rely on the public to use the tools that we have in lieu of vaccines, like social distancing and masking, in order to make any positive effects moving forward. Because as I said, anybody getting vaccinated right now is probably not going to be fully protected for several weeks. So we have to rely on social distancing, masking, particularly amongst those who are unvaccinated. With only about 50% average of the Metro Jacksonville area being vaccinated, you can walk into any store right now and see nobody is wearing masks. And statistically, that just doesn't make sense because we know one out of every two people who are eligible in Jacksonville are not vaccinated. So we really, really have to push that message if the governor or the mayor's office is not going to do it of get your vaccine and please mask and social distance, particularly if you're unvaccinated.
That's right. You can get the vaccine on practically every corner. It's free. You don't need an appointment. Go to any Walgreens, CVS, Publix, Walmart, and ask the pharmacist to give you the COVID vaccine. Do it today. 549-2937, as we talk with Chad Nielsen of U of Health Jacksonville. 549-2937. We're going to go to some calls now. Mark in Jacksonville. Hi, Mark. You're on the air. Actually, we're having trouble getting people connected on the phone. So, Chad, one more question for you before while we queue these folks up. What's your message to people, particularly younger adults, who just think this is all overblown? And they've also digested a lot of misinformation about the COVID vaccine, false information. What's your message to them?
Yeah, so the message is really for them to think of society in general at large. Although we're still not seeing a massive amount of healthy younger individuals into our hospital, we are seeing an increase. So they are affected by this, whether they believe it or not. Obviously, public health misinformation has been swirling in the news and social media, particularly with the White House having to step in with groups like Facebook and other social media companies to say, you guys have to stop this. But for these younger individuals, we plead with them, think of the rest of society. We have a social responsibility to protect those who can't get vaccinated, smaller children who are not yet of age, elderly, immunosuppressed people who maybe have reasons they can't get vaccinated. These younger individuals need to understand that they're part of a larger society. And per your comments earlier about the long-term effects of COVID-19, we're only now fully starting to realize what long-term COVID-19 damage looks like. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. It's not gone unnoticed in the medical community, that the loss of taste and the sense of smell, that's a brain process. So early signs of COVID are affecting your brain, and we don't know what that looks like long term, particularly in younger individuals. So they have a social responsibility, and if they don't bite on that, then they need to understand this is something that could be hanging around with them for a long time if they don't get vaccinated.
Yesterday, a story went viral out of Alabama, a doctor in Birmingham, where vaccination rates are really low, like only in the 30% range. She talked about what it was like to take care of patients who are dying from COVID-19 and are coming in to the hospital in Birmingham, Alabama, unvaccinated. And once they start to get intubated in, you know, or put on a ventilator because they can't breathe, they beg for the vaccine. And the doctor has to hold their hand and tell them, I'm sorry, it's too late. And I quote here, she says, they cry. They tell me they didn't know. They thought it was a hoax or that it was all political. They thought because they had a certain blood type or certain skin color, they wouldn't get sick. They thought it was just the flu. And they wish they could go back, but they can't. So just imagine going to the hospital, or your family member or friend going to the hospital, being intubated, being put on a ventilator, which I wouldn't wish on anyone. And realizing after it's too late, Chad, that if you had just gotten the vaccine, you would not be at death's door. That it, I can't even imagine how frustrating and heartbreaking it is for healthcare workers like yourself right now who are dealing with these patients in this easily avoidable situation. It's tragic.
You're spot on. It absolutely is tragic. We've seen reports of this from other states. We're seeing internally. We have more and more patients in our hospital not with COVID asking for the vaccine for similar reasons, because they see people down the hall not doing well. We've been in national media lately where patients have volunteered to go on camera with national media organizations and say, I regret not getting vaccinated. We know that's happening, and for our staff, it's extremely morale-sapping for them to see these scenarios play out in real life. So we're not trying to be fear-mongers. We're not trying to scare the public. But at the same time, this is real life happening, and our hospital and others in town are near breaking points filled with these patients who largely would not be in our hospitals if they would just get vaccinated.
Please get the vaccine, folks. 549-2937. Give us a call. Tina in Ponte Vedra is with us. Hi, Tina. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hi, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. I'm glad I'm alive. How about that? And not in the
That's
hospital. Go ahead, Tina.
Yeah, so I have a question regarding the vaccination and where manufacturers are in the process of allowing it for children under 12. I have a 10-year-old daughter. My 16-year-old son decided to get the vaccination. My husband and I are vaccinated, but we have this last person in our family that's very vulnerable right now, and I really want to get her vaccinated as soon as I can. I just don't know what information's out there in terms of the progress that they're making.
Yeah, Tina, so many parents are terrified about this. Thank you for that question, Tina. Chad Nielsen, UF Health. Kids are going back to school in 3 weeks, and masks are now optional in schools, and there's no shot for kids under 12. This is not a good situation. What about the younger kids?
Yeah, so in previous question you asked, Melissa, and I don't think I addressed, is first about masking in schools. I know that there's a recommendation in the local county school boards to mask your children who are not vaccinated in schools. There doesn't appear movement right now on whether or not that's going to be a mandatory masking mandate, so that's something to watch moving forward. And for the caller, Tina, I have a 4-year-old daughter myself who's ineligible for the vaccine currently. The major manufacturers, primarily Moderna and Pfizer, are both in the midst of trials of their vaccines on younger individuals as low as 4 years old. The latest news is that they will be submitting data to the FDA, hopefully sometime in the fall. September, October range in order for the FDA to potentially give EUA approval for the vaccines for kids under 12 as soon as midwinter, so a January time frame. The reason it's taking a little bit longer is the FDA requires double the amount of data to issue emergency use authorization for a vaccine for kids versus adults, because obviously kids have different bodies, different sizes, shapes, and they want to ensure that they have more data on kids to ensure that it's safe and efficacious. So we're hopeful that the trials are moving along well. Data suggests that they are moving along well, and hopefully we can get these vaccines out to individuals younger than 12 by the middle of winter.
Marcus on the north side. Hello, Marcus. You're on the air.
Hi, Melissa, and thank you for championing this cause. It's ridiculous that you've got to step up and take all this flack, and I'm watching it happen on Twitter, for example, people telling you to stop talking.
Yep,
and
some
stop
people
advocating, and you're my hero. I'm about to walk into the courthouse where probably two or three other lawyers may be masked. I haven't seen a single judge wearing a mask. No prosecutors, no public defenders. There are going to be inmates there wearing thin cloth masks. COVID is rampant in the jail. I don't know why they're not vaccinating or offering vaccines to inmates. You've got a population there incredibly vulnerable, incredibly at risk, and, you know, offer them $10 in commissary, and they would flock. We could hit a big chunk of the population. We opened too soon. We threw off all the controls, our politicians don't have the courage, and we are now paying the price. This was 100% inevitable and foreseeable. I feel like we're in a sociological experiment, except our lives are on the line. It's ridiculous, but please, if you're not vaccinated, get vaccinated. If you've got friends or family, speak up. Don't say, well, it's just a choice. We've seen that debate. I'm not going to say get vaccinated or don't get vaccinated. You're going to kill.
Okay. Marcus, thank you so much. All right. Chad, what about the courthouse and the jail?
Yeah, so we have actually been working with the jail, UF Health Jacksonville, in order to provide medications and in some cases vaccines to that population. We still have to have jail patients consent to these things. So even then, there's still opportunity to have people say no to the vaccine. But we are working with local organizations as well as the city to increase the availability of medications, vaccines, and drugs to those populations. But we do know Duval County, the sheriff's office, has been having an outbreak in their jail system now for several weeks, and we are monitoring that, and we've been providing care to ensure that those prisoners are not only not spreading it, but not ending up in the hospital moving forward. And so I appreciate the caller's views. We absolutely saw this coming. It was only a matter of time before Delta got here and sort of exploded onto the scene. So he's unfortunately right. We saw this coming, and it was inevitable, and it's just unfortunate that this has to happen right now.
Jason in San Marco. Hi, Jason. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. Thank you. Yeah, I just think we need some real political leadership out of the governor's office. And quite frankly, we have the former president living in the state now. And if the two of those guys would get together and make some meaningful public service announcements, which I personally, as a resident of this state and of Duval County, have not seen anywhere, it might make a big difference. I think it's really sad that we're putting the health of so many citizens basically at risk in order to satisfy this tiny sliver of a political base. It's just incredibly sad commentary about the leadership of the state of Florida right now. And also, I will point out that we haven't seen Marco Rubio or Senator Scott do a public service announcement. What are these guys doing? What is their job? I've asked you this before, and I keep wondering, what is the purpose of these people? What are they doing? They're not serving the people of the state of Florida, and it's really infuriating. Thank you again.
Jason, thank you. Let me be clear that Governor DeSantis yesterday did call for vaccinations. He did, as the mayor did, make a statement about that yesterday. That said, The governor's campaign is selling merchandise, his reelection campaign, branded merchandise that says, "Don't Fauci My Florida," an attempt to discredit Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease expert, who has served seven presidents and is regarded as, you know, a credible source on public health. We're getting lots of emails about this, too. Here's one from Dave. "I'd like to hear more about the other part of this issue, which is the effects of the propaganda, which has led people to believe fantasies regarding the vaccine." And here's a tweet from Lane. "Is anyone suing the governor over his action on forbidding mask mandates?" So, Chad Nielsen, this has become so politicized, particularly on the right, that it is affecting public health. And so what about the calls for more accountability on the part of public officials who've downplayed the seriousness of this, who are trolling Fauci with merchandise, who are mocking mask wearers and people who support vaccination? This should not be in the realm of the political. The virus affects us all. It will get you whether you're a liberal or a conservative. And so what about this?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Public health is not political in nature. Dr. Fauci, as you've said, has served seven presidents, and it's not until now that we're seeing him being denigrated in the public, in quarrels with congressional members, in subpoena hearings. Let me be clear. People don't enter into public health, epidemiology, or healthcare in general for fame or for money or for political gain. The vast majority of us who enter into this realm, including Dr. Fauci, joined because we felt we had something to give back to the citizens in increasing the health in their life and keeping them from ill effects of disease, right? That's why we do what we do. And so I think that all energy from politicians right now, regardless of what side of their aisle on, but particularly those who have not been standing up to this, need to put their energy, instead of denigrating public health officials, into actually advocating for vaccines, getting out there, showing their face, admitting, hey, I myself am vaccinated, and stop the you know, attacks to our public health officials throughout the state. We are extremely hardworking people. We're giving everything we've got, and frankly, morale is low.
I can imagine.
Public health and healthcare.
I can imagine. I can only imagine. Joyce in Arlington. Hi, Joyce. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for taking my call. I was annoyed yesterday and had to turn off the television when we kept getting these poor me. I'm in the hospital and I almost died. Well, duh. The first thing I'd like to see those individuals who are giving their testimony is that they should first apologize to the healthcare professionals and individuals whose lives are at risk at this moment because they didn't use good common sense. That's my comment.
Thank you, Joyce. I get your frustration, although I have to say I really do applaud the doctors and nurses who are doing their best to care for everyone, even if they had no one to blame but themselves for being in this situation. You know, I want to take a quick mention of something, Chad. City Council member Jacoby Pittman is on the mend. She was down with COVID and in the ICU for a while. Some of her staff, it's my understanding, also got sick with COVID despite being vaccinated, I'm told, with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. This week, we learned that her chef, a guy named Keith, who was only 51 years old, who had some underlying health conditions, passed away. He got COVID, and according to sources, he did get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. There were some breakthrough cases among her staff, despite being vaccinated with the J&J. And so I want to ask you a question. It's a tweet from Lauren. She says, "When will boosters be available, especially for people who got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine?"
Yeah, so that's a good question, and I'm sorry to hear of that staff member who unfortunately passed. So what we do know about all of the vaccines is all of them do show efficacy against the Delta variant. There's some recent reports in the news saying that Johnson & Johnson has a lower efficacy against Delta, but that's still being looked at by the FDA and by the independent research bodies. Right now, the CDC and the FDA are not requiring boosters or recommending them for any of the current vaccines on EUA approval here in the U.S., as the majority of them are still highly efficacious against the COVID-19 variant Delta. That being the case, the science is continually being looked at as to whether or not we do need a booster. It is inevitable. We probably will all need boosters regardless of our vaccine manufacturer in the future here as COVID continues to roll through the unvaccinated population, which causes it to mutate. So I just urge people, keep your eye on what the CDC is saying about booster shots, particularly for J&J. But at the end of the day, any vaccine manufacturer who you can get is going to significantly reduce your risk of hospitalization and death due to COVID.
That's right. Again, let's say that again. If you are vaccinated, you are protected against severe illness, hospitalization, and death. If you believe that that can't happen to you, hey, wake up. There are plenty of people in ICUs right now who believed that, and they're on ventilators or they're hooked up to an oxygen machine. So please, folks, go get the vaccine. It's free. You don't need an appointment, and you can get it all over town. Let's get the vaccination rates up. Thank you so much, Chad Nielsen, UF Health Jacksonville, a leader throughout this crisis, and we always so appreciate you being with us on the show. Thanks so much for all you do.
Yeah, you're very welcome, and thanks for having me.
And much more still ahead. Later in the hour, another public health problem, the opioid crisis, is still a big issue around Florida. We'll have an update. But up next.
There's so much opportunities, not only in the shipyards, but generally to think around, like, what could be happening.
Activating the city's riverfront and the long-vacant shipyards property. We'll be right back. Well, the project to activate Jacksonville's riverfront has been going on for months now, and there are lots of players in the mix. That includes architects and designers from out of state who've been brought in to contribute ideas to the overall vision that's being developed. I spoke about potential plans for the vacant shipyards property on the North Bank with two such experts, David Vandeleer of the firm DVDL and Claire Wise of WXY Architects. Take a listen. David, Claire, good to talk to you both. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Excited to be here, Melissa.
Likewise, Melissa.
So your firms have been really heavily involved in the public discussion about activating Jacksonville's riverfront. And in keeping with that, the shipyards property, including Metropolitan Park and the former kids campus site, is one portion of how you're envisioning a more activated riverfront. David, let's begin with you. This shipyard site has sat vacant for a very long time on the North Bank. It would be so great to finally see something done with it. Tell us what you envision and what's being discussed.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's actually a super exciting time, we feel, for Jacksonville. There's so much opportunities, not only in the shipyards, but generally to think around, like, what could be happening on the Riverwalk, both downtown, both on the north side as well as the south side. For the specific work on the shipyards, we work together with our partners at WXY, so Claire will tell you soon more about, like, the nitty-gritty detail of that. But we basically developed a conceptual space plan. And perhaps the easiest way to describe that is it's not a master plan, but it's basically a test fit to see, like, if you're taking those properties along the shipyards, what potential do they hold? Like what types of developments could be included when you're looking at it as a big park site? And yeah, it's pretty exciting to see what we've come to. And very importantly, while we're leading up with this work, we also developed a series of like both social and cultural principles, as well as design principles. And yeah, it may be interesting to chat a little bit about those at some point today.
Claire, let's start with, in a moment, we'll talk about the social and cultural components of this. But first, if you could, paint a picture in people's minds that are listening to this on the radio of the design, conceptual imaging for this section of riverfront that you and your team have put together?
Well, I think, you know, I'm going to ask all of the everyone listening on the radio to imagine a river walk in Jacksonville, which has, I have to say this from not living in Jacksonville and not actually visiting before this, has the most spectacular river. And it's just unique, you know. You can find rivers like this maybe in Europe and other places, but it's unique in that it's both wide but not too wide. So it has this great potential to be connected. And so if we're imagining, even in the parts that we know, a future where you have vibrant, walkable streets connected to the riverfront, including the whole shipyards and kind of moved kids campus we spoke about, but that there are places to go in these riverfront parks themselves that are important to the culture and kind of both new and old of Jacksonville, so that people will have a lot of reasons to go there. But there's another wrinkle in this, which is, and I really feel this from all over the country, is that the word resiliency or resilient, it's like, okay, what does that mean? Does it mean that we want to make sure that floods don't cause damage, that, you know, when we have a bad storm, we can still return to our parks? And the answer to that, I think, is yes. Like, people want to build their public space and their buildings and streets so that they feel secure about how they will use them in the future. Not that it will stop storms or stop change, but that it's planned for change. So I think an important component is what I call the multi-level public space, and really planning and designing the parks and the river walk so that you use the fact that you have to deal with flooding and infrastructure in a way that's a real positive. It allows overlooks, it allows kind of even new activities with boats, with fishing, even more fishing piers, different barges, new kinds of environment and nature. And then, so, you know, in describing it, I think there's an opportunity for Jacksonville to take its legacy with bridges and create a really unique and attractive and spectacular river walk.
Which certainly is what we all want. Now, going beyond that, talk a little bit, if you could, about the social and cultural priorities that you want to emphasize with this whole visioning process.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's such an exciting part of the process, we feel. When you're looking at riverfront developments, generally, as well as for public spaces and parks, of course, like you really want to be sure that those are great and exciting for everybody in the city, not for a subset of the city only, but for everybody. So with that in mind, we developed those principles I mentioned, and they range from like wanting to be welcoming and accessible to all, which of course means that like there need to be activities that are like interesting and exciting for many different types of people. But also you want to be sure that things are affordable and that, as Claire is describing, you can get there easily. And that's not only by car, but also in other ways. And then also quite important is to look at, for instance, the whole riverfront development as not only being fun, but also functional. Especially with public space development, it's very easy to focus on the fun aspects, and we all like fun, of course, right? It's great to work mm-hmm. on fun things, mm-hmm. but we also want to be sure that, like, if there's, for instance, services that the city could benefit from expanding on or creating completely new, then, like, why not think of the riverfront also as a site for some of those services? So think about, like, job opportunities, education. Perhaps about access to produce and so on. So there's a lot of opportunities there that make the riverfront not only a pleasant space to be, but also a space that could be very helpful in the day-to-day lives of people in Jacksonville.
Now, this is an ongoing conversation. There are meetings being held with a range of groups. Your firms have contributed so much to this. There's a survey that's still ongoing. So really, the idea is for the public to be part of this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. And actually, Claire, why don't you go ahead?
Oh, I was just really agreeing that I think that's the most exciting part of it, is that the numbers of people that have already participated, and I'll leave it to David to describe how we want to talk to even more people. This is really a not only a intergenerational project, but a project for future generations of people in Jacksonville.
We will continue to cover it on this program.
Absolutely true.
Yeah, it's the Activating Jacksonville's Riverfront Project, which we'll continue to talk about here on this show and at WJCT News. And thank you, David Vanderleer with DVDL, Claire Wise with WXY Architects, for joining us virtually and sharing your insights. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.
Well, the state of Florida, North Florida in particular, is among the top destinations for a huge increase in the amount of the deadly drug fentanyl illegally coming into this country across the U.S.-Mexico border in Texas. Dr. Christine Caulfield is CEO of LSF Health Systems in Jacksonville. She's on the line to tell us how this is affecting our public health. Dr. Caulfield, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Melissa. Good morning.
Good morning, and I'm glad to have you on because, of course, with all the attention on the COVID pandemic, other public health issues haven't gotten as much attention, but we need to talk about the opioid crisis. You are an expert on this. You've served on the White House's National Drug Control Strategic Advisory Committee. The CDC says the opiate epidemic continues to ravage Florida. What are you seeing out there?
We really are seeing an increase, actually, in our overdose deaths due to the pandemic, the perfect storm of the social isolation, unemployment rates rising, people not around individuals that are struggling with addiction to be able to, for example, administer Narcan, call 911. We really are seeing an even greater increase in our overdose deaths. This epidemic is not going away. In fact, it's getting worse.
We did see Florida Governor Ron DeSantis make a trip to the border. He told officials there that more than 1,000 pounds of the drug were seized at the U.S.-Mexico border last month. It's affecting the whole country, but it's really bad in Florida, Dr. Caulfield. Can you explain why?
It really is, and I think our waterways are, you know, one vehicle that fentanyl gets distributed throughout our great state, and I think that we have a lot of individuals that are really struggling in the aftermath of the pandemic with depression, anxiety, again, all the other stressors that impacted all of us during this very stressful time, and I think people are just picking up and not realizing that whatever drug of choice they are using could be very well laced with this deadly fentanyl.
Yeah, it is so dangerous. And of course, you at Ellis Have Health Systems are one of seven behavioral health managing entities contracted by the state to manage this state-funded system of behavioral health care for people who are struggling. We're talking people who are in poverty, without insurance, and are particularly vulnerable. Nearly 7,600 people died of an overdose in Florida last year, compared to about 5,000 in 2019. So certainly, Doctor, the pandemic has made all of this a lot worse, hasn't it?
It really has. And we really need to recognize that this is a community problem. It cannot just be solved by our treatment agencies. We need to band together. We need to raise awareness of the deadliness of this drug and how it is affecting our younger people, in particular, people of color now. Those stats are rising for overdose deaths for the African-American and the Hispanic population. It's no longer an older gentleman's, if you will, death rate that seems to be prominent. It is really affecting all age groups, all cohorts, all races. So it is very deadly. People don't realize that they think they might be getting straight heroin, don't understand the deadly effects of fentanyl being included in that shot of or hit of heroin. We're even finding fentanyl in marijuana. So people need to be very aware that this is nothing to fool with, deadly, and basically causes one to lose the ability to breathe. A respiration is shut down. And if we don't have Narcan or our wonderful EMS workers available, this is a very deadly situation.
So can you explain then what you and others are doing in Jacksonville to try to address this? Because there is a consortium working on this, right?
Absolutely. And we have great collaboration with all of our partners and stakeholders here in Duval County and throughout the 23 counties that we serve. We've also partnered with Project Opioid, and we are based now with Project Opioid at the Florida Chamber. And basically, Project Opioid is focused on raising awareness and getting support from three different cohorts, if you will, or stakeholders, from our faith-based community, from our philanthropic community, and through the business community. And we at LSF Health Systems have a very robust training institute. We're doing a lot of training and outreach, webinars, podcasts, in-person trainings, all around raising awareness and education regarding this continual opioid epidemic that's really killing our citizens.
It really is. And so, again, folks, please pay attention to this. And I want to thank you, Dr. Caulfield, for being such a steady voice on this crisis throughout. Dr. Christine Caulfield, CEO of LSF Health Systems in Jacksonville, a nationally noted expert on addiction and the opioid crisis. We're lucky to have you here. So, Doctor, thanks.
Oh, my pleasure.
A quick break, and in a moment, we're going to lighten things up as we drop in on Jacksonville's own Camp Craft Cocktails and what's new with them. That's next.
Farah and Farah, dedicated to representing the injured people in Jacksonville for over 40 years. Learn more at farahandfarah.com or 396-5555. Farah and Farah's accident attorneys are here for you, here for good.
UF Health North, a comprehensive medical campus, including 24-hour emergency care for children and adults, a 92-bed hospital, outpatient surgery, rehabilitation, advanced imaging, and more. Learn more at north.ufhealthjax.org.
It seems everyone got a new pet during the pandemic. Now the question is, did everyone make the right decision? I'm Courtney Collins in for Chris Boyd. New Yorker staff writer Nick Palmgarten joins us to talk about the animals we acquired to comfort us and why leaving them at home alone now might be a big problem. That's next time on Think.
Tonight at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, how Republican state legislatures are passing voting rights restrictions and other conservative legislation, advancing Republicans' most conservative agenda in years, and reflecting Donald Trump's stamp on the Republican Party. We talk with Ronald Brownstein, who's been writing about this in The Atlantic. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Record heat in the West, record cold in the South, and catastrophic flooding in between. The UN says that's what happens when humanity wages war on nature.
This is suicidal.
What are we doing about it, and are we doing enough?
Nature always strikes back, and it is already doing so with growing force and fury.
Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, Jacksonville's own Camp Craft Cocktails is shaking things up with some new products, new partnerships, even a new location. Co-founder and co-owner Rhonda Stringfellow is on the line to tell us all the delicious details. Hey, Rhonda.
Hi, it's great to talk to you today, Melissa.
And it's exciting to have you on. Camp Craft Cocktails is a locally made product that we featured in our own WJCT gift guide, Melissa's Picks. Tell us about your product.
We started out as a popsicle company, and we pivoted and deconstructed those recipes and put the dried ingredients in a glass jar. The end user either makes a zero-proof cocktail by using hot water, or they add their favorite spirit to the jar. You leave it in your fridge for 3 days. It's ready immediately if you use hot water. And then you take 1.5 ounces of that, strain it out, and add it to soda, juice, or tonic in a glass with ice. There are some preparations you can do with, for example, the old-fashioned or the hot toddy with hot tea, or we have a winter one we do with coffee that you could mix with a cocoa. But it really elevates your home experience to mirror something that you're having when you go out. And, of course, these days, a lot of people are not going out. It turned out to be fortuitous for us to be available to people when they started looking for ways to enjoy themselves at home.
Exactly right. It's the perfect gift, too, for anyone that you want to send a little pick-me-up to, because Lord knows we could all use a drink, Rhonda, after everything we've been through. Although you do offer some alcohol-free recipes, too, right?
Right. That's definitely 100% important to us. And we think that people who aren't drinking alcohol deserve something more than, you know, a soda or a bottle of water that might be in your fridge. And so it elevates the experience for everyone.
Now, you've really busted out over the last year. You've partnered up with big chains like Anthropologie. You've got celebrity partners like Halle Berry. Tell us about all of this exciting new stuff.
The Anthropologie has been going on for almost 2 years, and that has given us a large reach with a wonderful retailer in the U.S. And then we also have about 3,000 small retailers in the U.S., so they're boutiques and gift shops, and a lot of fabulous retailers that do all kinds of things. Like, we're in a paint shop and hardware stores and pharmacies, and that's been exciting to see the range of people like galleries and distilleries, of course, and wineries who are carrying us, and we feel like they are essential partners. Halle Berry received camp as a gift, and she has a outfit called Respin that is a health and wellness brand of hers. So she asked her Respin team to reach out to us and see if we would like to partner. And that was an easy yes for us.
Sure. Who wouldn't want that? Now you have a new home here in town as well. Tell us where you're moving your operations.
Right, to the Phoenix Arts District in Springfield, where we also live. So we're super excited for all of the reasons, not only just business, but because we love Springfield and think that so many things are possible in that area. It will be built out by the end of the year, and we're excited to move into that new home.
Very exciting. So how can everybody find your products? Camp Craft Cocktails, which is locally made and locally conceived, and as you said, is really getting a national reputation. How can we buy your products?
Locally, you can find us at some retailers like Greater Goods Cheese Shop in Murray Hill, Glass Bottle Society in Five Points, Sailor's Siren out of the beach, and then also at Cape House in Fernandina. And then we also have a retail website, www.campcraftcocktails.com.
When you set up shop in the Phoenix District, do you plan to have a grand opening or anything like that?
We'll definitely be celebrating. I don't think we've celebrated any milestone so far. We've just been so busy getting to the next marker. And so we are very ready to just toot all of the horns and invite everyone to celebrate with us.
It sounds like it will be so much fun. And as a Springfield resident myself, it's great to know that you're coming to our neighborhood. So congratulations, Rhonda. It's so hard to run a business, especially after the year and a half we've been through. It's great to see you going strong and even expanding. Check them out. It's Camp Craft Cocktails. Co-founder and co-owner Rhonda Stringfellow on the line. Rhonda, I raise a glass to you. Thanks.
Thank you for the conversation, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. And thanks to producer Heather Schatz, who is the one who discovered Camp Craft Cocktails for us. Director Josh Torres also drives this bus every day, and we can't do it without him. Thanks also to editorial director Jessica Palumbo and digital editor Bill Bortsfield. Keep those emails coming. We really value your feedback. Send them to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And catch our podcast up later today wherever you like to listen. Make sure to join us tomorrow, too, for our Friday Media Roundtable. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. If you have a free half hour today and you haven't been vaccinated, go do it. Do it today. We'll see you Friday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.